Bernice Thompson.
For the record, my name is Tom Doyle. I represent the appellant, Ms. Thompson, in this case. As the court knows, she was convicted.
Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
3 minutes. As the court knows, Ms. Thompson was convicted of 3 offenses. Theft in the first degree based on an amount in excess of $5,000 and 2 counts of Medicaid false statement. All of the events occurred within approximately a 4-month period, December 2012 to April 2013. The issue in the case is whether the Medicaid false statements merge with the theft in the first degree. And our argument is that it does, because, and we cite Vladovic, because the conduct of the misstatements raises the degree of the offense for the theft. Let me explain. Usually,
let me ask you, Counsel, is there some indication from the legislature in the way the statute is drafted that tells us that in proving theft in the first degree, that the state also has to prove this separate crime of Medicaid false statement?
No.
Okay. Isn't that what Vladivostok requires? Oh, is that something, some clear statement from the legislature?
I think it's, I frame it differently. I don't mean to step in your words, that in proving the theft in the first degree, the state is required to prove that the amount is in excess of $5,000. That would encompass, that's where you're going, where our argument's going. In this particular case, we're saying there's merger. Because the state, as I said before, charged first degree. It relied on the fact that there were the 2 offenses of the Medicaid false statement, each of which there were 2 major transactions, both of approximately $2,700, which exceeded the $5,000. Without the Medicaid false statement convictions, the state was precluded from getting the first degree assault. Now, the example I was going to use, comes up in robbery and assault.
Ahead.
And you have the robbery 1 if you have a weapon. You take the weapon away and the assault 2, every other robbery is second-degree robbery.
But in that case, they actually have to prove the completed crime of assault in the second degree, and the legislature has set that out in the statute. Am I right?
You're right.
Okay. Here, they do not have to actually prove the completed crime of Medicaid fraud. I mean, the only thing you're asking is that they just have to show that she got, on two occasions, something that amounted to $5,000, but they don't have to prove the whole crime, right? So, and there's nothing from the legislature. So I'm looking for some authority that would allow. I think I see where you're going, which is that the way the state charged this case, they charged it as in order to prove theft, we're basing on a series of transactions, and the series of transactions that we're relying on are the Medicaid false statements. And so that's your argument that the two merge. But I'm not aware of any authority that allows us to analyze the merger in that way.
Okay. I think it brushes closest to the merger, and I'll tell you why. Take the example that you just used, and you're absolutely correct, that you can take the Medicaid false statement, and you don't have to prove the amount, okay? I agree with that. But if you take this particular case and the state doesn't prove the amount in either of the Medicaid cases, it doesn't have the $5,000. It doesn't have the gun in the assault example I gave you to bump up the theft to theft 1. They had to prove both of those elements, or excuse me, the amounts in both of those cases, in order to aggregate the amount to $5,000.
Well, but on the Medicaid false statement, they really didn't have to prove any amount at all, did they?
No, but they did. Well, and that's the point. True. And that's why I used the word linked in the brief. They linked the amounts to get to the theft one.
Counsel, could the jury have convicted your client of theft one without convicting her of Medicaid fraud?
Not in this case. Because if they didn't do the Medicaid fraud, they would have never established the amount of $5,000.
The element of the Medicaid fraud not required to prove the theft?
Oh, absolutely. You could prove Medicaid fraud without proving the amount. But if you didn't prove
the
amount,
you
wouldn't have the theft one.
Can you prove the acts that are alleged to be, can you prove enough of the conduct that was alleged for both counts to sustain a conviction for first-degree theft but still be missing an element of the Medicaid fraud?
If I understand your question, they could prove the Medicaid fraud without proving the $5,000.
No, I'm the other way around. And they prove the theft of $5,000 through this conduct without proving every element of the Medicaid fraud crime.
Well, you know, this is semantics.
Well, not really, because doesn't Battle Big is the case that's frequently cited for the merger doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And Battle Big says merger applies only where the state is required to prove an act separately defined as a crime by the criminal statute to prove an additional crime. That's where Judge Leach is going with this question.
And that's where I'm asking, or where we're arguing, that the link in this particular case, the uniqueness of this case, if you will, is in the way it was charged and the way it was tried, they added the elements of, they proved the amount needed for the theft by proving the false statement. That's why we're saying they're merged.
So I think we can all agree that where we're going with all of this discussion is legislative intent. So one aspect of merger is to look at the purposes underlying these two different statutes. Don't they share different purposes? They don't share, but aren't the purposes different?
That's a different question.
No, it's a merger question.
No, well, yeah, but merger, well, in merger...
What's the answer? I understand.
My answer would be no, because under merger, you have, if one elevates the other, have it.
Well, I think what she's getting, there's an exception to the merger analysis, and one of those exceptions is if each of the two crimes serve different purposes. And I think that's what she's asking, why do not Medicaid false statement serve one purpose, and theft in the first degree serve a separate purpose? And you can answer that during your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Right. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Yarden Weidenfeld, and I represent the state in this case. Ms. Thompson's convictions for theft in the first degree and Medicaid false statement do not violate the double jeopardy doctrine. The appellant is arguing that the convictions for Medicaid false statement merge into the convictions for theft in the first degree, as was argued in the briefing and was just argued by counsel.
As this was charged, did the state not accept the burden of proving Medicaid false statements in order to prove the theft in the first degree? I mean, isn't that what it says? In your information, based on a series of transactions, and those transactions being the two incidents of Medicaid fraud?
In order for us to prove I wouldn't say that we accepted that burden, because they actually require separate separate facts that have to be proven for each. There's different evidence that was required.
Well, what were the transactions that were referred to in the complaint then, or the information?
The transactions were the calling in of the hours and also the receipt of the funds that were then essentially unlawfully taken. This was, by the way, a bench trial, and Judge Schaller found the defendant or the appellant in this case guilty under both prongs of theft, under wrongfully taking and under taking by color aid of deception. So in the transactions were...
What's the significance of the fact that it's under both prongs? How does that matter?
Well, the conviction... Well, what she... actually appropriated the money for herself by when the money was actually the funds were actually transferred to her account a few days or the funds were actually transferred to her account after the call, the person actually calls in their hours to the central SSPS, the Social Service Payment System, and then as a result of that, funds are automatically transferred or sent by check. I believe in this case it was by an electronic funds transfer into her account. So the wrongfully taking was the appropriating of the money. Now, so she actually, the judge actually found her guilty under both prongs of it. One could make the point that the color aid of deception was the calling in and deceiving by claiming hours that were not worked. However, that would not be required to prove theft by wrongfully taking, because that was committed when the funds were taken. I would actually call the court's attention to...
That's all very interesting, but how does it relate to whether merger occurs, or why does it matter which prong of the theft statute the judge found existed here in deciding whether the Medicaid fraud merged into the theft?
Well, in terms of merger, I'm not sure it's the, I mean, I was answering different questions here. In terms of merger, I don't think it actually makes a difference, because the crimes of the theft crime is elevated to theft in the first degree by one fact, and that's by the fact that more than $5,000 were taken.
Could you have presented evidence which would, as charged, establish the crime of theft in the first degree without also proving each element of the crime of Medicaid fraud?
Well, the answer to that question, Your Honor, certainly there's no question that that is – the answer to the question is yes. When we're talking – this is where I was distinguishing between the two – when you're talking about theft by wrongfully taking, because I don't necessarily think that we would necessarily have to have proven the deception at all to show that she wrongfully appropriated those funds. Part of the trial proof in here was the transfer of the funds to her account. And then the fact that we also presented evidence that's in the record of her having spent all those funds, having appropriated them. So the fact that that was wrongful did not necessarily require there that there was color aid of deception. However, I would also argue that even in terms of the prong by color aid of deception, it's also true that there was additional facts. And the particular thing at issue, Your Honor, would be the fact that Medicaid false statement specifically requires the state to prove that the funds taken were for a medical program under RCW 74.09.
And you wouldn't need to prove that to prove that.
Correct. And I would point out that in the record, I actually cited line page 144 of the Record of Proceedings of Volume 1, the witness there says, we do child care, adult care, we do some medical payments. And then on line 4, page 159, he actually was asked a question. Mr. Mina, who worked for SSPS, he was actually asked a question as to whether this had to do with Medicaid. And he said, I don't know. I don't really deal with that. That's on page 159. So we had to present separate proof that this was Medicaid. And I think that gets right back to what Judge Lau had pointed out in the appellant's argument, that ultimately the courts have made it very clear in the Freeman case and the Orange case, which were cited in the state's brief, that the key question when determining double jeopardy is what is the legislature's intent. That's been said over and over and over again, that the key thing is to determine what the legislature's intent was. And I would argue that here the theft statute was always part of common law with larceny, but in its current form, it was codified in 1975 with the codification of the RCW. Medicaid false statement was established 4 years later in 1979, as obviously I would argue would indicate a legislative intent to punish that crime separately. And also, as was pointed out,
is there any requirement under the federal statute that provides the money for Medicaid to states that the states have a statute like our Medicaid fraud criminal statute?
Whether it's required that we have an actual statute, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that what I do in the Attorney General's office, the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, it is, from my understanding, required that we have a Medicaid Fraud Control Unit to prosecute those types of crimes.
I would argue that the purpose of this statute is to qualify for federal funding, whereas the other crime is simply, the other crime is simply to implement the general protection of public from criminal behavior.
It certainly makes what we do, which our work is required by the Medicaid funding. I believe all but one state has one, and my understanding is that we have to have Medicaid Fraud Control Unit in order to receive Medicaid funds. So it certainly makes our work easier and more important. And I would argue, as I think Judge Lowitt had mentioned, that the statutes have independent purposes and effect. I had cited on page 12 of my brief that the process of determining whether double jeopardy applies is recursive, returning to the legislature's intent again and again. And the false statements have an independent effect on the integrity of the state's Medicaid system, which is separate and apart from the theft statutes. It's different from the cases, for instance, there was a distinguishing the Valentine case where the court said assault and murder are basically addressing the same evils, assault of conduct, whereas assault and robbery under Cole do not. They address separate evils, one being assault of conduct, one being taking property. So I would argue that the same thing is true here. They're separate statutes. The Medicaid false statement was codified later. And furthermore, I would argue that under the merger doctrine, which is the argument that's primarily made by Ms. Thompson, that the crime is elevated to theft in the first degree by the money that's taken. As was pointed out in some of the argument here, the Medicaid false statements could be established without any funds being taken. The money might never have been transferred. They might have caught the problem before money was transferred. But once the person completes the false statement, that crime is completed. So the elevation, it's not like the Parmalee case, which was quoted, where the elevation is based on specifically on proving that no contract orders were violated. Here, the elevation is based on the additional, on the fact that it was over 5,000. That could be done in one transaction. It could be done in 10 transactions. They're completely separate issues. It's therefore more like cases Esparza and Knight, which were cited in the state's brief, where a robbery or an attempted robbery was elevated first degree, not by an assault, and therefore the court held that they did not constitute double jeopardy. I would also point out that in terms of the transaction questions that we started with, that we did make a second argument, which is in the alternative, that under the interesting case that was one of the only cases decided on this statute by ever, one of, I think, two published cases, State v. Wright, which was decided by Division III about a year and a half ago and later published, they held that one of the reasons why the crimes of Medicaid false statement and theft did not constitute same criminal conduct under the SRA was that they actually constituted that it was not same conduct. It was so that the actions took place at different places in different times because the Medicaid false statements were made when they were made and the theft was when the theft was taken. So that's another basis on which the court could find traditional double jeopardy analysis not apply. But in any case, even under traditional analysis, merger and therefore double jeopardy does not apply. Thank you, Your Honor.
First of all, this is a merger case, a double jeopardy case, not a same and similar. And those are entirely different concepts, and I'll leave it at that. Counsel argues that assault and robbery are different and made the argument, but he leaves out the one element. And the element I tried to use as an example, when you have the robbery one and the assault two, the weapon. The weapon in this case is the amount of monies. You asked the question about the legislative intent. The way this offense was charged, the theft was by color or aid of deception. We know that. On the Medicaid false statement is based on giving a false statement or withholding by omission. In both cases, it's the same. What the legislature is trying to prevent is
a difference, counsel, in that
I'm sorry.
An element of the source of the money matters in the Medicaid fraud case. The source of the money does not matter in the theft case. Do you agree?
I would agree with that.
So you don't have to prove Medicaid fraud to get the elevated theft one. All you have to prove is the dollar amount and the exercise, wrongful exercise of authority over the funds or the procuring of the funds through theft or deception.
True.
So isn't that a significant difference? If you don't prove an element of assault two, you don't get to robbery one.
But that's not the case here. Yeah, you're right. But that's not the case here because, you know, to repeat myself, again, in the Medicaid false statement offenses, they use the amounts to then link it to the theft one. And your analysis avoids that critical element.
What the evidence is isn't all of the analysis, the elements of each crime and whether the elements of one need to be proved to establish the other have been viewed by our Supreme Court as evidence of the legislature's intent to punish only once or twice. And that's what your argument fails to account for.
What I'm saying is because of the way they charged it and the way they used the amounts, you can argue, and it's a good argument, that the legislative intent is exactly the same under the facts of this case. And that's what's unique about this case.
Which of the elements of Medicaid fraud as charged elevates the theft to first degree?
As charged.
Which
of yeah, yeah. Now, I'll answer your question. As charged, it doesn't.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.